Well, good morning, everyone. It's an honor for me this morning to introduce an individual who I know spent many hours riding on a bulldozer and an excavator. And when you have that much time, as I know, sitting in a tractor seat, you get to think. And sometimes Steve thought too much. But the good thing is, in 1996, when he decided to run for the Iowa Senate, he jumped in there and did it, and that was the year that we took control of the Iowa Senate, and we actually got a lot of things done for a number of years, and all of a sudden we're back in the minority now, and that's something that we all have to work to change. But this man went on to serve us very well in the Congress of the United States, representing almost half of the state of Iowa, Congressman Steve King.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much. This is a warm welcome here, and I am exhilarated to be joined with this great Republican family here in St. Paul, Minnesota. And boy, did we see something last night. We saw the stage set, and I got asked all day yesterday, what happens if Sarah Palin, what if she muffs it? What if she drops the ball? What if she boots it? What happens if she collapses out there on the stage? What are you Republicans going to do then? And I am not worried. I am not worried because, I saw Mary Lou Retton practice, and no one was worried about her when she did the extra after the gold medal can across the pommel horse years ago in the Olympics. Now I'll get to the current part that you're thinking about. So when you know there's somebody that's got it inside and they've demonstrated and performed every day of their life and they get to this point where the whole world is focused on her like they were last night on Governor Sarah Palin, hockey mom extraordinaire, she took that pitch that came right down the middle of the plate. She cracked it out of the park. She drilled a 10. She's our Shawn Johnson. And she also told us that there is no glass ceiling for women in America, that she learned that you can be what you aspire to be, regardless of whether you're a man or a woman or what your background might happen to be. Now, there may be a glass ceiling for liberal women in America. If we'd go back to that first female nominee on the other ticket, and then we'd look at Hillary Clinton, who now, for a long time to come, I probably don't have to listen to this down on the chalkboard. Phew. I thought for a while I'd rather run against her, but I'm just really glad that she's off to the side of the stage for a while. We have a real conservative woman on this ticket that exhilarates and inspires us all. She's pro-life. You don't have to wonder where she stands on the issue. She's for this Constitution, the text of it, and its original understanding as it was understood to me when it was ratified. That is priceless to have that extra support behind John McCain in that category. She is. I think this, not only did she drill it last night and nail a 10, but, well, here's what we did a few months ago. We have this little grudge match with the congressional Democrats, and once a year, we go have the congressional shoot-off, and we go over to the skeet range, the trap range, and the sporting clays range, and we go through there and shoot all of those targets and add up the score, and we figure out who's the best shot. The Republicans just wiped out the Democrats this year. Now, yes, I did participate in that, but I got a little work to do if I'm going to be the ringer. But I propose this. Let's put our ticket up against the other side. Let's see Obama and that guy that wasn't mentioned last night, but I'll say his name is Biden. He kind of got pushed way back to the back of the stage. No one thought about him, I don't think, let alone spoke about him. Put those two up there and give them a 30-06. And we'll put John McCain, our top gun, up against Crackshot, Sarah Palin, or those two together up against Obama and Biden, and we'll settle this thing. Who's the best shot? Who supports the Second Amendment? Our side, not their side. Who supports family? Our side, not their side. Who supports marriage? Our side, not their side. Who supports life? Our side, not their side. Who's got a ticket that's dynamic, that spans the generations, that has the experience of deep patriotic service in John McCain, and a ticket also that crosses the gender line for the right reasons for the first time, and someone who has executive experience someone who has started out in PTA and worked her way on up now to be on the cusp of becoming the next Vice President of the United States, Sarah Palin. I think it's extraordinary. And so all of these skills that she has that have been unfolding over the last few days, and those that we saw on display last night, I mean, I guess there have been a couple of times in my life that I've stepped out on a stage. The crowd wasn't for me, but it was as large as it was last night. And there's a certain feeling you get when you step up on that stage and everything hits you all at once and you begin to realize you're standing in the middle of a moment in history. She very much knew that she was standing in the middle of a moment of history last night. And I know that the speech was on the teleprompter, and I know that she'd practiced the speech. And I'm more of a student of this than most, but I was watching her eyes, I was watching her posture, I was watching her hand motions, how she expressed herself, how she was aware of the crowd and how they reacted to her. And I talked to a couple last night that was sitting where they could see the teleprompter, and they talked a little bit about what she ad-libbed into that speech. I really like that. If you've got somebody that comes out on the world stage for the first time, and they give them a teleprompter, and you'd think, well, this would be, what is it, moose in the headlights? And to watch her gestures, her posture, the way she conducted herself, the way she worked the pauses, the way she knew she had to let the applause go about so far down, but also pick up into it, or the time would have gotten so long, we'd still be there, because we'd have applauded till daylight this morning. The way she conducted herself told me very much. She knew where she stood last night. Sarah Palin understands who she is. She understood who we are out there in that crowd as delegates here in the Republican National Convention. And when I saw that it was over and she walked to the corners of the stage, now here's more my nature. If something was that fantastically glorious and I happened to be standing in the lights, you could not wipe the grin off of my face. But Sarah Palin felt that differently. She walked around that stage with kind of a somber look, and it was a look of, yes, this is going to be a long, hard slog. I'm ready for this task, and I'm ready to lead. And the question that needed to be answered last night was, can we visualize Sarah Palin as one day President of the United States? Absolutely. I have no doubt. So she's a budget cutter. I mean, sold the plane on eBay, man. You know, I had the urge to do that when maybe my boys drove a little too fast. I thought that might be a good idea, but I didn't have the guts. And she took the Alaska's plane, the governor's plane, sold it on eBay. That's nerves of steel. And so all the things, she's a budget cutter, a budget hawk. She's for expanding energy. She has set the deal together to build the gas pipeline to come down here to the United States. That needed to happen for a long time. They couldn't get past all of the bureaucrats and all the special interests that are there. I've taken a special interest in Alaska. I was signed up to go up there on the Alaska pipeline in 1970 with a company out of Des Moines called Green and Grosbeck. And so I would have been a bulldozer, an excavator operator up there, Stu. And what happened was, in 1970, the environmental extremists got their ranks of lawyers together. That is not an accidentally chosen term. And they filed their environmental lawsuits and shut down the Alaska pipeline from 1970 until late 1973. Well, meanwhile, I'm sitting there thinking, I want to go. I can make some money up there. It was tough rules in Alaska. When they tell you that the pipeliners shot all the wolves, I can tell you what the rules really were. They were no guns to start with, no booze, no women, no gambling. Now you know, one other thing you know, it had to pay good. And so I sat back there from 1970, 71, 72, and most of the way through 1973, a little burning inside because my pot of gold was in Alaska, in the oil, not the gold. And I couldn't get there because environmentalists shut down the development of the oil fields. And I paid attention. 1973, it wasn't because they walked their way through the myriad of litigation and resolved this thing and finally started to drill for oil and build a pipeline. It was because Congress acted. Congress decided that for national security reasons, we needed to drill the North Slope of Alaska. So with a sweeping act that eliminated all litigation, they said, go forth and drill and build the pipeline and build a road. And so I want to say this. When people tell you that it's 10, 15, or 20 years before we get oil out of Alaska, I had a lady say that in a town hall meeting here a couple weeks ago. I said, where'd you hear that? And she said, well, I read it. I said, did you laugh when you read it? And she said, well, no. And I said, did you believe it? Well, yes. I said, okay, well, put this into your equation. Once Congress cleaned the litigation out of the way in late 73, 35 months later, there was oil coming out of the pipeline in Valdez, Alaska. 35 months, 854 miles of pipeline, 600 miles of road, all the wells, the feeder tubes, the terminals on either end, all of that up there in a new engineering endeavor. 35 months, and we're listening to Democrats say 10, 15, or 20 years. It is outrageous. We should laugh in their face and tell them to go create another myth. And now we have somebody from up there that really knows what I've just said and probably is looking for that toothpick that comes from Anwar for my $500 check, but I don't think it exists. So this lady has laid out these standards, standard after standard, the things we believe in. They took on corruption, challenged a seated Republican governor, and emerged with her head on her shoulders and standing tall and proud last night here as a nominee for Vice President of the United States. How do you do that? I mean, that is a tough path to walk into the face of corruption and emerge the other side of that looking stronger and better and standing on top of the pedestal that we put her on last night, not the one she asked for. I am quite proud of that. Where might she be weak? Not fiscally, not on the budget side of this, not on the executive side, not on the energy side, not on the life side, the marriage side, the family side. Where would she be weak? Well, foreign policy is one of the things I hear the pundits say. Now, I just came back night before last, real late, from Iraq, Afghanistan, and the nation, Georgia, Tbilisi, to be particular. And here's what I see going on. There is, well, back up, 1984, Jean Kirkpatrick was ambassador of the United Nations, appointed by Reagan. And as she burned down in that job, she decided to step down for her reasons. But I remember reading a little piece in the paper back in those years, those 24 years ago, Jean Kirkpatrick said, what is going on in this Cold War is the equivalent of playing chess and Monopoly on the same board. And the question is, will we bankrupt the Soviet Union economically before they checkmate us militarily? That was branded into my memory because it was so salient, so on point, so much explained the Cold War. 5 years later, the economy of the Soviet Union collapsed. The wall went down in 1989. The Soviets were really done December 31st, 1991, and freedom echoed all the way across Western Europe, and Eastern Europe and Asia, all the way to the Pacific Ocean. All the way over across the shore, across the way, not very far, was Alaska. Now, that's what happened. That's what we're up against. The things I see are now radical Islamists have joined up with the economic and geopolitical interests of Putin. And Putin played the chess game really well. The Russians played the chess game really well back in the 80s, but they forgot about the monopoly side of that board. They were out there building their military-industrial complex with a managed economy that couldn't compete with the robust nature of our free market economy. And they collapsed because Ronald Reagan had the vision to build up our military, up the ante. We went all in, and the Russians lost that hand. That's what happened to end the Cold War. It was Ronald Reagan's vision that did this. Now, here we are today. The Russians didn't believe that they had lost because their philosophy and their managed economy was weaker. They believed that, we believe that. We thought everybody in the world has to see we've defeated them. It's a given. But what the Russians came to was, that was lessons learned. Now we'll go back and retool. The Russians and Marxists all over the world have since joined back together. The world does not want to tolerate a single superpower on this planet. And Putin thinks the worst thing that happened in the history of his lifetime, at least, was the collapse of the Soviet Union. He is building it back up again. He has fired the first shots in Georgia that will become, I believe, the beginning of Cold World War II. This is a scary world we're in. It is chess and monopoly on the same board. They are trying to control the energy in the world. There are two ways out of this for us. One of them is for us to control the energy instead of them. That's going to take bullets and airplanes. The other one is for us to access all American energy, every form of it, ethanol, biodiesel, wind, drill for oil, drill for natural gas, open up the coal, lots more nuclear. Let's put some solar up there while we're at it. The only thing the Democrats will let us have are wind, solar, and geothermal, and they're begrudging about that. But we've got John McCain that said all forms of energy, and Sarah Palin that says all forms of energy, and I know where it can, a lot of it can come from. She said so last night. Now, to tie in the foreign policy piece, I'm not here to tell you the Russians are coming at us, but I stood on that ground in Georgia where the Russians had come and broke down and stole the freedom of the Georgian people. They very much want to move that Iron Curtain back towards the West, and all of it if they can. It's going to take some understanding of foreign policy. John McCain's got it. He looked Putin in the eye and said, not I see a friend. He said, I see KGB. McCain was absolutely right on that. I've not looked Putin in the eye, but I think that he sees it right. And the other thing that we need to keep in mind is the Russians have come to this continent. They had already landed at another point in our history, and they landed at Alaska. And you can believe the people that live up there around Sitka and those places in Alaska know about that history and are watching a little more closely than we are. I'm happy with our nominee, Sarah Palin. I think that she drilled a 10 last night, and I'm enthusiastic about going out on this campaign. I'm looking forward to John McCain's speech tonight. I will say that yesterday morning, to hear the speeches on McCain's behalf, to hear especially the most inspiring to me was Colonel Bud Day. I mean, I have the great privilege of listening. The most decorated living American war hero, and from Sioux City, Iowa. He's our guy, and he is inspiring, and I have the privilege a couple of times to pick up a shotgun and go hunt some birds with Bud. And, you know, I first started it out this way. He's 80-some years old, and well, okay, I'm a spry guy, and I'll just wait, and when Bud misses, I'll back him up. And after three birds hit the grass, I decided that if I'm going to get any shooting, I can't really wait for Bud. So I said, all right, Bud, this is it. Now I'm going to shoot him before they get their landing gear up because I won't get a crack at it otherwise. And we've had a great time, been a great man. But I want to say a couple words about Obama, the very shortest version of how I can lay this thing out. We're made of two things, nature and nurture. Whatever our DNA is, that's, as we heard yesterday morning, our gift from God. That's the nature part. And the nurture is the continuum of all of your life experiences that shape our personalities and our character and give us our grit and our conviction. Now, we know where John McCain gets a lot of his. He is a tough, ornery nationalist that can look our enemy in the eye and do a thumbs up and a wink on the way by the little pinhole. We heard that yesterday, too. That's the kind of man we have nominated for president, an authentic American hero. It isn't going to be a long debate in this campaign about whether or not our nominee is an authentic American hero. I have some deja vu feeling about that going back to 2004. No one challenges that on John McCain. But I ask this question. John McCain's, by the way, his heritage, his nature, and his nurture is exactly what you would want for a president. If you go back, what would you like to have? I'd like to have a son of an admiral that went to the Naval Academy, that's steeped in not only the military, steeped in patriotism, one who has received that kind of nurture every day of his life, who's lived it, who's set an example, who's shown the grit and the determination. That's John McCain, and his judgment's been good. His foreign policy judgment's been good. He's been a budget hawk. He was against earmarks when being against earmarks wasn't cool. But Obama, whatever the miracle of his DNA combination might be, think in terms of this. If we know a lot about his life by now, the continuum of his life, and I'm not going to go through that, but I'll just say this. If we could have the perfect DNA combination, the baby born today that has the best combination of genetics, the gift from God, to be president of the United States, what part of Obama's nurture, what part of his upbringing, what part of his relationships that he has developed or the educational system that he has gone through would you subject that perfect little baby to if you wanted to see that person become a president of the United States? And the Democrats have to answer that question. There is no part of that that I would subject a child, a young man, or a woman to. I don't think that there's a nurture there that shows a threat of patriotism or a sense of appreciating free market capitalism or the destiny of America or what has made this country great. And if you would ask Obama, what are the pillars of American exceptionalism? I have no idea what the answer would be. I am very concerned about this. And I want somebody who looks at this world and looks in the eyes of Putin and sees KGB. I don't want somebody that says, yeah, I'd like to have a little chat with Ahmadinejad. You don't get anything in debate, anything in negotiations, unless you've got a lever. These people are not stupid. Being nice gets you nothing with them. They think you are weak. And so, to put this package together, I'll say this. They've nominated someone who is inexperienced, whom we're going to find more about as time goes on. And they have to answer the question, nature versus nurture, where would Obama get his patriotism? And I'm going to do another little explanation. We saw the pictures of Obama standing on the stage down at Tom Harkin's Steak Fry. Big flag there, and behind him was Bill Richardson, behind him was Hillary Clinton. And I saw the pictures, it was national anthem time, and his hands were at his sides. Now, he got excoriated for that as being disrespectful or maybe even defiant. I don't think he was. I think that's an extra level of criticism. It's the other way around. It's when somebody stands up in here and says, bow your heads, please, we bow our heads because it's in our nature and our nurture to pray together. When we stand for the pledge and the national anthem, we put our hand over our heart automatically because it's in our nurture to do so. But Obama was standing in the front of the line, and when the national anthem went up, it wasn't automatic, the sounds of the national anthem that caused his hand to go over his heart. He stood there because his background, his nurture, didn't cause people to do that. I do not believe that if you would follow him through the continuum of his lifetime, you would see very often any groups of people standing and putting their hand over their heart when the national anthem was played. They may stand respectfully, but I think that's what happened with Obama. So we have this chance today and this march through the future to take the work that you have done, and it has been fantastic, and you have served this country and you served this party with great, great energy. The delegates here are the cream of the crop. And some of you have years and years of service into this party. And some of you are here, have you shown the spark that caused the other Republicans to recognize that talent in you. And we're bringing you all through this process. You will be friends for a lifetime having gone to this convention here in 2008 in St. Paul. And we're going to bring this thing out of victory. We're going to bring this thing out of victory. And we are going to save America from the precipice of a leftward lurch that will be coming if we don't do our job. We can stand up and get the truth out to America. We can raise the money. We can put out the yard signs. We can make the phone calls. Elections in the end aren't really won, though, by television commercials, radio commercials, and mailers. That gives us dialogue, reasons, things to talk about. They're won around tables like this, people drinking coffee, at work, at church, at play, in the neighborhood, at the ball game, wherever we go, because when there's someone there to defend John McCain and Sarah Palin, that person that had their logical head handed to them doesn't open their mouth again. If they lose the debate at the first table, they don't go on and bring up the same stupid argument at the second table. So let's take them on everywhere. Let's do it with great joy. And let's move forward and bring this ticket home tonight. I am looking forward to it. I am exhilarated. And I will tell you that the glass ceiling has been blown away, folks. When people behind me say, she will be president someday in the middle of her speech, they hadn't even heard all the rest that came out yet, and it got better. That's a good thrilling thing for me. I think this, that we've needed a strong conservative leader. I've said for a long time, I would vote for Margaret Thatcher if she were American. Joining in this ticket with us that joined last night and will be matched up with the nomination of John McCain tonight is our Margaret Thatcher. God bless you.